Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Even though you make payroll every Friday, you don't have a guaranteed paycheck. You're the owner, and you eat what you kill.
We are back. It's 13 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. Our phone number is 888-822-8255, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Joan Pride is our good friend. She's a member of our Brain Trust. She's a senior editor with the Kiplinger Letter. She's our guest. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We are going to be talking about the most recent Kiplinger Washington letter, which is 104.
That's right.
It's the weekly letter. That comes out every week. I've been a subscriber for many years, not as long as they've been in business, which is 76.
Not quite.
Just turned over last week, 76 years old. But they also have three other letters, the agriculture letter, the California letter, and the tax letter. Those are biweekly. And then don't forget their great magazine, the Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine.
That's right.
And we're going to tell you in a little bit how you can subscribe to those. But right now, Joan, let's get into the letter. Congress will go on a spending spree. Now, why are they going to do that?
Well, it's a little confusing because if you listen to the rhetoric, they're talking about things like saving Social Security and being careful with their money, but they really aren't. There's just too many things that members of Congress want to spend money on, and in some cases have to spend money on.
It's like Christmas, right?
It's always Christmas in Congress. One of the problems is that when we talked about this many times before is that we are forecast to have a surplus in the budget.
The president said $115 billion.
Now, is that the surplus? Is that the real surplus or the fake surplus?
I don't know, but that's his story, and he's sticking to it.
One of the problems is the numbers that they throw around for the surplus really are what Kiplinger believes to be not truthful, because you have to take away the money that really should be promised to the Social Security trust fund.
Right.
So we don't believe that the surplus is much, much smaller if you take all that money away. It's very tiny, in fact, and I apologize for not having the number. But if you look at it in that way, and they don't have a lot of money to spend.
Right.
But every member of Congress has their pet projects that they want to get money funneled for. And it's very difficult to try to deal with all those priorities, in addition to things like helping farmers and also dealing with a lot of these disasters we've had, like Hurricane Floyd and other things. Mm-hmm. That's true emergency money we need for those things. So there's just way too many priorities. And, of course, then there's discussion of the tax cut. They want to fund that as well.
You know, John Vertu was on the show earlier in the week. He's the president of the National Taxpayers Union. And he did give us some good news. Even if you're like you and me, Joan, you don't actually believe that we have $115 billion surplus. John did say something that you got to like this trend, and that was that he said he believed in 1999 that the general fund did not borrow any money from Social Security.
Well,
that's the first time in many, many years that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
And there are gazillions of dollars that are owed to Social Security by the general fund.
And when you hear officials making reference to paying down the Social Security debt, that's what they're talking about, paying down the debt. We owe the Social Security trust funds. It's like think of a vault, and instead of money sitting in there, there's all these IOUs sitting in there.
Right.
We've got to replace those IOUs with money at some point if we want to fund Social Security going forward.
One of the things that irritates me about politicians, and I see this at the national level, and I see it at the state level, and that is they rock along and they posture and waste time and politic and everything, and don't really get the job done, especially with regard to spending, until the last minute.
And it seems to be getting worse every year.
And then the quality of the result is very poor because they're rushing to get it done against the deadline and against going home.
Well, maybe we need to also set the political backdrop here. Last year you had a similar situation where there were a lot of appropriations bills that were not finished by the end of the fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to avoid a government shutdown, which they're very frightened of, the Republicans, in essence, caved into the president on a lot of issues, a lot of spending issues in these many different bills. And this year, the Republicans vowed they wouldn't do that again because they felt they had been hoodwinked and ended up spending a lot of money for priorities that were not their own priorities.
But the hoodwinking goes on, doesn't it?
Well, and it's hard to know who's going to come out on top this year, but the Republicans have vowed that that's not going to happen again, so the brinksmanship is going to go on a little longer than it did last year.
I can tell you who's going to come out on top. I already know. You
I
know
think
why?
It's going to be the president.
The better politician
yeah.
is going to come out on top.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, if anyone doubts whether the better politicians are in the administration or in Congress, then you just need to start paying attention a little bit more.
And let me clarify, we're not saying we like or dislike the president. We're just saying he's a better politician.
He is the body politic walking around. I mean, he's the personification of the concept of politician. I mean, if he could become the word that you use. I mean, that Clinton could replace the word politic.
In the dictionary.
A politician, I should say, yeah.
Well, and just to set the stage also for people, the big traumatic event for Republicans came back, I believe it was 95, when there was a big budget showdown, and in fact the government was shut down because they didn't get the bills done on time. Republicans let this happen because they assumed that the president would be blamed, but somehow he was not blamed. They were.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they've never gotten over that.
That's right. They're still stinging from that, and they haven't figured out how to solve that problem.
No.
Now, I want to make sure that people understand that when I say politician, when I say someone is an ultimate politician, that does not mean that necessarily that any of these people, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, have the other qualities that we would like our politicians to have.
Well, that's governing.
Such as statesmanship.
Yeah, governing and statesmanship isn't being a politician. That's
patriotism.
Different. Right.
Those key quality words. That doesn't always, just because someone is a great politician, Republican or Democrat, that doesn't mean that you get those others in the same package.
Well, and the reason that we're having this discussion right now is because the ability to govern and the ability to be a statesman or statesperson, as someone like myself might say, is really lacking right now in our society.
Statesperson just doesn't have the same ring.
Oh, yes, it does.
Come on. Do you say male person?
I say mail carrier.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes, I do.
All right, good for you. Folks, we're going to take a quick break. I told you it wasn't going to take long. Use this in the first segment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to find out what Kiplinger has to say about if there is going to be a real surplus next year, fiscal 2000. 20 after. I'm Jim Blassie, the Small Business Advocate. I'm having a great time with a good friend, Joan Pride of Kiplinger. I'm Jim Blessing, I'm the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com, and I would like for Joan Pride, our special guest, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters, to give her website out, please.
Yes, sir. That website is www.kiplinger.com.
And that is where they can do what?
Well, you can go to the website and look at a lot of free items on the website, but we also have a section called Special Services, which is a link to the Kiplinger Washington letter and gives you extra information on the items in the letter.
Dynamite site.
And it's a subscription website, but if you click onto that website, you can get a 30-day free trial, which is worth every penny.
It's worth more than every penny. And folks, be careful. You will get addicted to it. It's a good site. It's that particular feature is outstanding, and I enjoy my Kiplinger connection much, much more. Now that I've got, I mean, I've always enjoyed it. As I say, I was a subscriber for many years, but before I started having Kiplinger on the show, but now with the KSS, that's just a great feature. Joan, you guys say that there probably won't be a real surplus even next year.
Right, we're saying that the non-social security surplus, that the quote-unquote real part of the surplus, will be $14 billion. Now that sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
When you consider we have had $150 billion, as I remember, deficit.
Well, that's, I mean, to the average,
you got
to
like the trend, right?
It sounds like a lot of money, but it really is very, very little. And that's going to be parceled out among, we're saying, a little bit more in defense, education, and what we're calling emergencies.
Well, but Joan, let's stop. I mean,
sure.
I'm thinking in terms of a small business person here.
Yeah.
And small business owners work, a lot of small business owners work really, really hard to put anything of black on the bottom line.
No question.
Anything.
No question.
I mean, $3. Obviously, they'd like to make a million, and some do.
Yeah.
But I mean, I can remember, working with small businesses, and how I mean, we'd have a party because they had something. I mean, it was $200.
Yeah.
But it was the trend.
Yeah.
That they liked, because the year before maybe they lost 10,000.
True.
I mean. So you got to like the trend.
Got to like the trend, and that trend, will hopefully continue as long as the economy stays good.
But your point is well taken. $14 billion being projected for right now, I mean, it would take one hurricane maybe to wipe that out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I guess we wouldn't give that much for hurricane relief, but it could be, I mean, that it wouldn't take too many surprises to wipe that out.
That could be eaten. Let's say we had a military engagement somewhere,
right?
A pretty good hurricane or maybe a drought somewhere. You have a couple of problems and that's it.
Well, let's look at something else, and this is something that the administration held against the Republicans for their tax bill, but it also applies to the president projecting these kind of surpluses, and that is the fact that they're predicting these numbers based on projecting what the economy is going to do next year.
There's
no guarantee that we're going to have the same level of economic growth next year as we have right now.
Although what's interesting is that the estimates that we've had for quite a while now have tended to be underestimates.
Yeah.
That every time they've projected a surplus, it's been smaller than the one that they actually get.
Right.
So that's a little bit of good news.
But if the stock market is Wall Street's off a little bit right now.
Right.
And actually a fair amount. I've forgotten what the percentage is.
We got problems with the dollar
in Japan only,
right.
but yeah, that we do. There are other problems around the world. So, not to be a doomsayer, it's just that you got to be careful. And your point is well taken. $14 billion is a good trend, but it's not a lot of money.
Right.
Okay, let's move on. What's next?
Okay. Well, what would you like to talk about?
Well, the other proposals. There's some other proposals.
How about things that are going to happen?
Yeah.
We started writing this story, and there were so many things that aren't going to get done this year, and we decided, we don't want it to be about what's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to make it positive. One thing that we expect to have, is a very tiny tax bill. And when I say tiny, I'm talking about $3 billion, and that's compared with...
That's lunch money.
Yeah, I know, because it's compared with $792 billion, which is the size of the bill that had been passed by Congress, but that was the bill that the president vetoed.
But remember, that was going to be apportioned out over 10 years.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay,
now,
what
this
else?
This bill isn't going to do a whole lot. It's going to basically keep some programs going that were expiring. For example, the Research and Development Tax Credit.
All right. Okay, stand by, Joan. We're going to take a break. Folks, it's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. One of the things we're going to be talking about are those of you who have satellites. You get your TV reception from satellites. Something interesting coming down the pike for you. Talking about that and a lot more when we come right back after these messages. Welcome back, Heroes. It's 30 after. Thank you very much for being here. I appreciate your business. Our phone number is 888-822-8255. Joan Pride, Senior Editor of the Kiplinger Letters, is our special guest and our good friend, as she is every week. We're talking about the most recent Kiplinger Letter. Joan, there were some things that you were telling us that are definitely going to happen.
Yes.
With
and
Congress.
Probably one of the most interesting things involves satellite TV.
Yeah.
There's a deadline coming up that Congress is well aware of, because I think they probably get more mail on this issue than most others.
The House passed the bill, this thing in April, didn't it?
Right. Now, this license is going to expire that gives satellite TV carriers the right to carry network and superstation programming.
Mm-hmm.
So what Congress needs to do is renew the license, and we're predicting that they will do that.
But it also will allow the local stations. That's the big deal in this, isn't it?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because that was the big knock on having satellite. I've never had one, but I know people who do, and they say that they can't get the local channels, the television station in their market.
Yeah, someone living in Minneapolis is getting the local weather in Florida or something,
right.
Which doesn't
yeah.
make any sense
and,
at all.
And if they're interested in the news or whatever kind of local programming, they can't get it. But
right.
This new bill will allow the satellite companies to offer that.
Right.
And that's a big deal. That's a paradigm shift in that industry for sure.
Yeah. No question.
All right, here's another one that really
Uh-oh.
Burns me up.
Get that soapbox out. Okay, step up on it.
Go ahead.
No, it's not my soapbox. It's yours. But I'll tell you what's going to happen.
Minimum
wage.
He
said this all year that the Republicans are going to cave and they're going to approve a hike in the minimum wage.
What a bunch of wimps.
It will be an increase of at least a dollar.
What a bunch of political wimps.
And in order to soften the blow, they're going to add a bunch of tax cuts that had been in the original big bill. And these cuts are supposed to help small businesses.
What a bunch of hogwash. Because, to believe that is to presume that those people know anything about what small business needs. If they knew what small business needed, they wouldn't pass minimum wage increase. It makes absolutely no sense in the marketplace. There's no economic reason. It's 100% political. Did you know, Joan, that, and I don't know if I told you, that I learned that the minimum wage initially was 100% politics. It had nothing to do with economics.
No, you didn't tell me that.
It happened, and we reported it on the show before a while back with Bert Folsom, and he told us that back in the early part of the century, the garment companies in New England were trying to prevent their jobs from going south into the Carolinas and into that part of the world, the country, all over the South, where people were working for lower wages than their people were, and so they literally got a federal minimum wage started in Congress so that the people in the South would have to pay the same as the people in the North. That was the reason it was started.
Hey, Jim?
Yeah.
You know this is an hour show, right?
Sorry.
Okay.
Folks, it's not good for the economy. It makes no sense. I've got a lot more to say, but I'm not going to.
No, go ahead.
No, right. I'm through.
It's your show.
I'm through. Talk about bankruptcy. Go
All
ahead.
Right. Bankruptcy reform. Boy, we keep talking about this every year. We keep saying, well, we think it's going to happen, and then it doesn't. So
the first politician I ever had on the show was Bill McCollum, I should say, from Florida, from the Orlando district, and we talked about this almost 2 years ago.
That's right. Now, and I'm going to, I know I sound like a broken record, but the people that need to be reined in here are the individuals. It's not the small businesses that are running around going bankrupt. Their bankruptcies are going down. It's individuals that have to get clamped down on, and that's what this legislation would do.
And it's hard for the people who are against this to argue that Americans today, with our economy like it is, can't afford to pay their bills.
Well, that's why it looks like people are just spending beyond their means and not being responsible, and then they end up in bankruptcy.
It's not like everybody's having a tough time and people are about to lose their homes or whatever. These people, most bankruptcies that I know, the people that I know who do bankruptcy say it's mostly credit card debt.
Right, and the other thing is, when we're talking about the word bankruptcy, it's not as if you end up in debtor's prison. You mm-hmm. end up being freed from your debts and you go on with your life.
Well, in fact, that's the cottage industry that the bankruptcy lawyers have developed, and so they use these marketing terms for getting people to come in. They, debt consolidation and all these other things that they use to get people to come in, and to make it sound like it almost sounds cool to take bankruptcy.
Pain free.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah.
Not good. It's not good for anybody. Okay, let's move on and talk about electricity deregulation.
Absolutely.
What's going to happen there?
Got to find out.
It's on hold. Well, the thing is, folks, the important thing here, Joan, is it's the federal electricity deregulation.
Well, that's a good point.
It's happening in states.
Right. It's not that it's not happening. It's that states are taking the initiative because they're tired of waiting for the federal government. Now, there's only one problem with that, is that with 50 different states having 50 different ways of doing this, you get a patchwork quilt.
That's right. But currently there are 23, I think you guys reported there, 23 states who have started electricity deregulation.
Right. Yeah, I knew it was close to half.
And you can kind of plot it, find the most expensive electricity in the nation, and that's where your deregulation will begin. Find the cheapest electricity in the country, and that's where it will appear the last.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Another thing that's not going to happen is an overhaul of the Superfund law, which is another thing we've been talking about for quite a while that really needs to get done at some point.
Right. And but you guys say the small business relief with regard to the Superfund will happen in the year 2000. Quickly, can you give us a 15-second commercial on Superfund?
Well, Superfund is the cleanup law that's supposed to clean up toxic waste sites.
Right. You might say, well, what small businesses have Superfund sites? Convenience stores, gas stations
sure.
become a Superfund site.
Okay.
Stand by. We've got to take a break. It's 39 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. It's 44 after. Welcome back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the small business advocate. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters, is our guest and our good friend. And we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter and the things, the issues of the day that Kiplinger comment on every time they publish one of their letters, which comes out on Friday, by the way, folks. And if it's mailed to you, you'll get it on Monday. If you receive it electronically, I get it both ways, actually. I just can't get enough of it. And there's something inside of there that I don't think I want to talk about, Joan.
Boy, there are so many lines there, and I'm.
That's right. Yeah, thank you for not taking the easy ones.
Uncharacteristic restraint on my part.
I can, and I am so noted, by the way. if you get it electronically, folks, it comes in your email about 3:30 or 4:00, 5:00 or so on Friday afternoon.
That's right. You can start your weekend with it.
It's pretty darn neat. And check it out. And give us the website again.
Okay. It's www.kiplinger.com.
Kiplinger.com. It's easy, and you get a free one for 30 days. You get the letter and the KSS free for 30 days as a free trial if you want to go there.
Absolutely.
Check it out. Okay. Let's move over and talk about something else. The Internet will be a big player in Campaign 2000, you say.
Right, and already, if you look, any candidate, serious or not serious, already has a website and has for quite a while. And it's not just to send out information to voters, it also is designed to raise money. I mean, any of these websites that you go to, there's always an icon you can click on where if you want to contribute, you can.
Where, let's unfocus our eyes a little bit, Joan, and just sort of look into our crystal ball. Where...
Uh-oh.
Where could this, think, just imagine where this could go. Where, imagine two elections from now, what the part the Internet could play. Have you thought
cyber
about that?
Cyber campaigning, I guess.
Think about that. Think about the money that could potentially be saved. Think
sure.
Think about the chat rooms. On and on and on. There's so many things that are going to be changed in our society, in our culture, in our government over the next few years
when
because
you think
of technology.
About Harry Truman won by doing a whistle-stop campaign around the country.
Yeah.
You can just do whistle-stop on the Internet.
Mm-hmm. Somebody said a while back that, you know, that every leader from King Tut to Woodrow Wilson went to their inauguration in a horse-drawn carriage, you know, and you know, right up into the century, and you know, since then, look how far we've come.
Yep.
So technology is something. Speaking of technology, I want to come back and bring up a little revisit something that I think we talked about last week, and that was the how automobile manufacturers and how consumers of automobiles were going to be doing business. Wasn't that last week?
I think it was. We've been talking about the idea that automobile manufacturers want to set up systems where people can order directly from them.
Yes.
And then we've talked about who that would hurt the most.
Now, folks, this is not in this letter this week, but I found some stuff.
We're
and
cheating.
I know. Well, no, it's just a follow-up. Well,
okay.
I know you've seen this too. There are two stories actually. One is a company that's called Trilogy Incorporated that's going to spend $100 billion buying up car dealerships and turn them into e-dealers.
That's right.
So they need that distribution not so much to sell the cars, but to deliver the cars and for people to test drive the cars.
That's right.
And what they're talking about doing, this is some stuff I got out of the Wall Street Journal recently, that what they're talking about doing is not having a large inventory of cars, only test cars. You go and you drive them and find the one you want, and then you order it, and they build it for you.
And that's what one of the things we said last week, that in the old days, when my dad was ordering a car, it took a couple of months. But now they can roll them off the assembly line and get them to you much faster.
Now, that's the feature. Here's the benefit. The company predicts that they can save $2,000 to $4,000 of the cost of getting a car to the consumer this way.
Wow.
Now, hold on to that thought and move over to this one. And this is where GM is in the process of buying up some of their own dealerships. What the general says is they're setting the stage for what could be a major conflict with these dealers because they're going to form a special unit to buy dealerships that will compete in the marketplace with the independent franchises. That's all those dealers out there that have been their mainstream conduit for consumers. Now, the National Automobile Dealers Association calls it a flawed initiative. So the folks who are selling cars out there are not happy about this.
You could be an independent dealer of one of the big three and have a big three dealer down the street from you who's really competing against you because they're owned by the mother company.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is GM is saying, wait, guys, they're doing like the book-selling companies have done, and like a lot of the other companies, they're saying, hey, not only do, you know, we may not be the first to enter the electronic marketplace with what we sell, but we've certainly got to join them. And that's what GM is saying, I think, don't you?
That's right. No question.
They've got to answer this competition. They've got to be prepared for that. And so this is just a little bit of an update on what we were talking about. You will be, the way you buy a car in the future, year by year, is going to grow more and more different and more advanced.
Yeah, it's something we'll have to keep watching.
Yeah, okay.
The letter.
Recycling computers and TVs?
Yes, sir.
What about that?
Well, we've got a lot of disposal problems. And you know what computers are like. They become obsolete so quickly.
Yeah.
And there's not much you can do with them. So the idea is to recycle the shell and put them to use.
Hmm. As what? Fern stands or something? Or I've got some boat anchors out here. What? Hello?
I'm not sure. We don't say. We just say recycle.
Well, that's not a lot of help.
No, I know.
Stand by, Joan. It's 50 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassie, again, the Small Business Advocate. We got a lot more stuff to talk to you about, folks, as we wrap up the hour. Stay with us, please. We are back, having more fun than the law allows, with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters, recently promoted. Congratulations again, Joan.
Thank you, Jim.
I'm proud of you and proud for you. I'm glad that Kiplinger finally recognized the valuable asset that you are.
Well, what is it that
you
want?
I'm just
trying
to be charming here.
You're making me very suspicious.
I'm trying to be charming. I know, you're so paranoid.
Yeah.
Oil prices about a year ago, Joan, were around $11 or $12 a barrel. It was killing the small independent producer in this country because they couldn't even afford. They had wells that were only producing 6, 8, 10, 12, 15 barrels a day, and they weren't even making enough money to maintain the pump, the motor that ran the pump to get this oil out of the ground. And so that really, there were actually national security issues involved in that aspect of this marketplace. But guess what? Tell us where oil prices are today.
$21 a barrel.
And if you don't know that, you haven't bought gas lately.
No, that's true. Yeah. Who would have thought OPEC would have actually stuck together and stuck to their production?
Tell us what that means.
Well, it means that they agreed to reduce production.
But they've done that before.
Well, they've done it before, but then one or two renegades would always say, oh, I want to get those higher prices, so I'm going to produce more and make more money, and that would defeat the whole purpose of what they were trying to do.
Giving it a whole new meaning of the term loose confederacy, as I've said before.
But this time they were tight. Now, they're going to loosen things. The current agreement expires at the end of March. So we're saying at that point we think prices will dip, but not a whole lot. We're saying back down to maybe 19.
Yep. Well, it's just another example of how some of these countries can kind of control things. And, you know, one of the things that's been helping to offset some of the inflationary things in the marketplace and has prevented inflation from running rampant and causing the interest rates to go up and the economy to slow down has been the literal deflation of crude oil prices.
That's right.
But now that they've gone back up.
Yeah.
That's a major component of the marketplace
that could
really have a very quick effect on inflation, couldn't it?
No question about it.
Yeah. You guys say the Fed is going to stand pat on interest rates next Tuesday.
Yes.
We will cover on this show. We'll have a Fed Watch show with Eleanor Solomon. I still don't know who's going to be with us, but we'll have somebody good with Eleanor Solomon and myself.
No increases for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
Now let's get to the important stuff.
Now wait a minute. I want to talk about this a little bit more.
I don't know.
I want to warn small business owners. The Fed is cautioning banks about some of their lending practices, and I am actually seeing this in the marketplace, folks. So be careful. Check your position with your banker. Make sure that you're shoring up your business plan as much as you can. Just be careful. You may have a different attitude with your banker next time you go see him or her. I'm just warning you. I'm seeing the results of the Fed's cautioning of banks to make sure that they're not too over exuberant with their loans. Okay, now Joe.
Finally. Okay, holiday season. Don't look for a lot of pumpkins this year because of drought and hurricanes.
Pumpkins.
Yeah, pumpkins. But you want to hear the good news?
What?
Plenty of turkeys.
Well, boy, don't we know that.
No comment.
I'm going to let that easy one go, too. I think the subliminal message is coming across there, though.
Plenty of turkeys, low prices for cranberry sauce, and there will be plenty of Christmas trees.
Hmm. I wonder how many people remember the cranberry sauce scare. You're too young to remember. You're too young to remember.
Long before I was
40 or so years ago, there was a cranberry sauce scare just before Thanksgiving, and it just was catastrophic to that industry because nobody bought them. I remember my mother.
If you can call in and describe it correctly, you should give them a prize.
My mother made candy apples, and it just wasn't the same. Joe, we got to go. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Jim.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Got to go for this hour, folks. Before we do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, don't be afraid to try something new. Amateurs built the Ark. Professionals built the Titanic. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.